Thanks so much for listening to the Finally Quit Porn podcast. If you do like these episodes, then please do let me know. And you can do that by leaving a 5-star review. I check these at least once a week, if I'm honest, and I absolutely love to see these reviews increase. So thanks so much in advance. And in today's episode, we talk to Ariel, who has also had a journey of quitting porn, and we explore self-compassion versus self-discipline when on this journey. So thanks so much for listening. Let's get into it. Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Finally Quit Porn podcast. Today I'm joined by Ariel Sabijan. Welcome on the show, Ariel. How are you doing today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot for coming on. Have you ever been on a podcast before?
I have, yeah.
Okay, and how was it?
It was interesting, for sure. It's fun. It feels, you know, like we're engaging and we're having conversations and we just have an audience, so it feels good.
Nice. Sounds good. And was that one talking about porn or was that something else?
No, I mean, it's been about other themes. This is actually my first time talking about this topic. I'm a little nervous, I'm not going to lie, but I'm also like, all right, let's do this. It's time to break the mold, to break the shell, break the silence.
I love that. It's very brave of you for coming on here, and I really do appreciate you coming on to talk with me. Do you want to start off by introducing yourself a bit more and telling us like where you're at in life at the moment and what sort of piqued your interest in talking about quitting porn with me today as well?
Yeah, so my name is Ariel. I am currently in Miami. I connected through you through Instagram because we were connecting about being healer, being coaches, you know, being in the healing industry. And I had spoken to you that I was thinking of going into the niche of helping people, particularly gay men, heal from sexual compulsion and porn addiction. Now, the reason why I wanted to go into that field, into that niche, was because I, you know, felt like that had been such a huge part of my journey of healing from that and being able to free myself from an over-sexualized culture that I had learned as a teenager when I first started, dating and having boyfriends and, you know, meeting guys on apps and getting to know people. And I saw the effects, the psychological effects that it had on me to live in a culture where we were prioritizing sexual attraction over that spiritual, emotional bond, and how psychologically damaging it was for me. Now, I'm not speaking for everybody, right? This is definitely just a case for me. However, I didn't start to notice that that feeling of not having that deep connection, I started noticing within my friends, and I started noticing with more people that I started speaking to, and I started seeing patterns, right, where people were engaging in these sexual compulsions, and in porn is definitely a big one, and not being able to fully form relationships with the people around them because of them. And then I kind of made it into my mission to try something new myself and try it on myself. What would it be like to prioritize, you know, a different kind of connection? And I started noticing that my relationships got a lot richer. And as they started getting richer, these compulsions started lessening and their grip on me started becoming weaker and weaker and weaker. And I started noticing that I was able to share myself more, that I was able to start speaking out more and being able to be vulnerable with people more. Now, I'm not going to say, right, I think this is probably why I connected with you, because I, you know, have spoken to you about being able to heal the inner child, heal the inner teenager, do all the family constellations, which I did do. But I noticed that there was a missing piece in all of this, which was that even though now the impulse is way, 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 way weak, there was still that part that would cave into the urges, you know, which is where I was like, oh, you know, I'm curious to hear how Tomás was able to handle that aspect. Because for me, I was like, okay, I no longer feel like I'm over-sexualizing myself or the people around me. However, I feel like I've created this habit for so long that it just feels harmless, right? It feels like an old little friend that I couldn't quite let go of, right? And it's like, okay, what would it be like to live without you? And I'm not sure how I could live without you, right? Like, if you leave, then what's gonna take your place? What's gonna take your place? And so, lately, that has been, you know, just creating connections, just living my purpose. And the more that I live my purpose, actually, the more that I share myself and I do these kinds of things, the more that I feel like this energy is being channeled towards a higher perspective and towards the betterment of myself and towards humanity. So I hope that gives you a little bit of a juicy answer.
Yeah, that's an amazing answer. I love that. And your story is similar to mine in the sense that you had done quite a lot of like internal work and healing, mm-hmm. and then there was still this aspect. There's still the neural pathways essentially are still there. Like, no matter how healed you feel, and even when you do dedicate yourself towards purpose, it can still be really hard to quit this problem until we really tap into those neural pathways and actually learn how to deal with the urges as well. So would you say that over the last like few years you've massively reduced your consumption of porn and engaging in any sort of sexually compulsive behaviors, and you've kind of shifted towards helping other people and forming deeper relationships and connections, but you're still maybe not like 100% perfect with quitting mm-hmm. this at this point? Is that what you say?
That is the perfect way to summarize it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what were the things that what would you say like impacted you the most when you were compulsively acting out in the past? Like what were the negative side effects, would you say?
So I think that's a really good question. Shame and isolation. So I think when I was in those particular like mindsets, it was very isolating for me. It was very isolating. So it's like the feeling of that deep, fulfilling, you know, enriching, like soul enriching connections were definitely not there. So it was very draining for me, actually. So, you know, engaging in that type of consciousness was very draining. And I felt like I was slowly losing my life force. It was just so, I think it was traumatizing too. It just kept me in that trauma cycle where I was just like playing out these loops. Now, being able to get away from that has been like getting out of hell. I mean, I know that sounds a little intense, but that's literally how I lived it. Like, I crawled out of hell, you know, and I'm like, okay, maybe I'm not quite into heaven just yet. Or maybe I am, you know, maybe I'm just, you know, like looking at hell and saying my last goodbye. But getting out of hell took a lot of effort. It took a lot of discipline, and it took a lot of honesty with myself about what got me there in the first place. Because I really do believe that, I mean, I don't know how you look at a higher power, but I really do believe that this higher power loves us unconditionally, and it's us who puts ourselves in this situation that we separate ourselves from this, you know, love consciousness. And I chose to separate myself from this love consciousness to see what would happen, and you know, because of things I experienced in my childhood. And it felt like hell. It felt like hell. And getting out of that just has been so enriching that I, you know, I talked to my friend about it, and I'm like, this story had played such a big portion of my life for so long that, you know, it would be almost a waste for me not to turn all of this pain that I've experienced over the years that I was able to transform into gold and make something out of it. And that's when I started, you know, like thinking about, okay, maybe I can become a coach within this industry, just given my experience with it and how much of an impact it had on me being able to forge these relationships and being able to forge a purpose for myself. You know, when I was in deep, deep addiction, I was a fully scholarship student. I was really blessed in many ways. I was always very dedicated. I was always very ambitious, always wanting that something more. I'm an immigrant. My parents, you know, we come from a rural area from Central America, and so coming to the US, we always were ingrained with that idea of achievement and that drive for more, right? So when you are competing with an addiction that can take that from you, or it can take the energy that you want to dedicate to your purpose and to your drive, it can be very damaging, and it could take its toll. And so being able to fully process this compulsion behavior and allow for your purpose to shine forth, I think that was the most impactful change that I've created for myself throughout this journey.
Yeah, that's so interesting. There's a really, really good book, which I'd highly recommend everyone read, called The Molecule of More. When it comes back to quitting porn, what's so interesting is that there's a massive link there with dopamine, is that obviously you get a huge amount of dopamine being released. And essentially, there's two options, really. It's either have these massive bursts of dopamine in anticipation of the pleasure of an orgasm, which is going to deplete you of energy and not actually lead to anything in the long term, or it's obviously going sort of chase something or pursue something that's a lot bigger, often bigger than ourselves. Maybe it's about helping other people, maybe it's about being on purpose and making the world a better place, and there's kind of two options there, isn't there?
You know, I come from a line of thinking that humans are very simple at our core. And there's two really powerful drivers, you know, within us that impulse us to act and to take action and to make our impression on the world. One is the impulsion for procreation, right? We want to procreate. We want to bond. We want to, and I'm not talking about hooking up. I'm talking about like pair bonding. I'm talking about union. I'm talking about marriage, which involves a sexual connection as well. That drive is so instilled within us, is what keeps our species going, and is what has impulsed a lot of the major religions throughout the world. They all, pretty much all of them, profess, you know, marriage, right? It's a really powerful tenet within that. And I don't think that that has left us. I think that that drive is still very powerful, is what drives us to, you know, go to the gym sometimes or just become better because we want to become that match for our partner. And create our family. I think that that's a really powerful driver. And then there's also that sense of purpose. I want to matter. I want to create a change in the world. There's a problem that needs fixing, and here I am, and I want to be able to fix it. And I get a sense of pleasure and joy and enrichment and fulfillment when I do this, right? When a doctor is able to cure his patient, when a lawyer is able to win their case, or when a coach like you is able to drive their clients to quit, you know, this habit and to make something of themselves. The issue for me was when you lose track of these two things, right? When that connection to family became haywire or became kind of, you know, I guess what takes over is like this depression, and within that depression, I, you know, acted on things that I thought were going to help me to get that dopamine fix, because I wasn't getting that dopamine. I wasn't getting those neurochemicals that I needed from the ways that I thought, you know, would come through family, through purpose, through a sense of enjoyment at school, at work. And so porn came in, and then, you know, your junkie mind, I like when you said that, I think you said that in one of our text messages, I know how the junkie mind works. The junkie mind thinks that this is like a really quick way to get that love, right? Because ultimately what we're looking for is some kind of love. We want to feel like we're connected. And that's the lie, that's the trick, because you're not getting that sense of love. You're not getting that sense of fulfillment. It's a lie. You're keeping going, and you're in a cycle, and it keeps you stuck. And now we have to retrain our mind to get different sources of satisfaction. Now for me, Thomas, what has worked magically is, and I don't know, this has worked for you, I know you mentioned a script, what has worked for me is to just talk to somebody. You know, genuinely, like, reach out to people and talk. And not in a codependent way, but just in a sharing of stories, right? Like, I think we grew up in a way of tribal culture. You know, humans are, like, tribal sense of creatures, and we evolve in a tribe. And it's necessary, I think, for our evolution to have a tribe. And I know modern culture has kind of isolated us, so as we navigate and get out of isolation and come back into tribe, come back into kinship, come back into community, come back into harmonious relationships, harmonious union with your partner, with your family, with yourself, I think that this impulse just really, really weakens, because the love that you get from that is so much richer, right, than this cheap connection that you get from from these images. But I'm curious to hear, Thomas, about why you think that people struggle with quitting this addiction.
I think there's so many reasons. I totally agree with what you were saying there about how essentially this is about the brain evolving in a certain way, and then what you now have is all this ultra stimulus which essentially hijacks the reward circuitry in the brain. And so what happens over time is like you start to associate the huge amount of dopamine being released, which seems to the brain like a really amazing thing, because that in the brain has evolved to believe it's going to like lead to procreation, as you say, or pair bonding. And and so the brain values that massively. And so what happens is something called delta FOSB then makes it so that the next time a craving occurs, you have this huge amount of desire and the urge that's really strong, because the brain wants you to then act out in the same way that you did last time to get the orgasm again. But the problem is that we now have pornography, which is replacing actual intimacy. And so in the brain, there's like two maps, and these maps between the orgasm and pornography have become interlinked. So they're like in the same place together now. And we have to rewire the brain by disconnecting those two things again. And that's really difficult. And then I think what you were saying about, you know, talking this out in groups and tribes and all of that stuff, I think that can be really, really useful for a lot of people. And I definitely agree that it's helped me a lot talking about it. But then at the same time, I would say that it's not going to solve everything, because one of the ways in which the talking about it can help is that it can help reduce the cues. Because let's say you're feeling lonely, isolated, or shame, which are three of the main triggers that people will experience, and I used to experience a lot. Talking about it's going to help eliminate those triggers massively. And so you're probably going to experience less urges, which will mean you'll have less relapses, but it may not necessarily rewire the brain fully, because just because you're having less triggers and less urges, it doesn't actually mean you've fully tapped into this neural pathway and learned how to deal with the urge permanently, because then there's going to be other triggers as well. So for me personally, I've done quite a lot of like healing work and managed to maybe find a bit more purpose in life and whatnot, but then for me, until I learned how to fully deal with the urge, the problem would keep on coming back. So I don't know if that answers your question a little bit. I kind of went on a bit of a tangent, but
no, it's okay.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
No, I think that is super important, this this rewiring of the brain, and how we can go about that, because I know from what I've studied, the rewiring of the brain is one of the core tenets of the study. So you know, what beliefs are we holding on to? What energies are we holding on to that keep us stuck within this cycle? And how can we retrain ourselves, our mind, our body, to go about and beyond learning a new way to relate to ourselves and to the sexual energy? So yeah, you know, what I'm thinking right now is like, all right, so what's happening to me when I'm in that urge? What am I really craving, and how do I deal with it? One of the ways that I deal with it is by staying present to it and asking myself, what do I feel that this is going to give to me? What is it that I'm actually looking for? Because very, very rarely is it that I'm actually looking for orgasm, or very rarely is it that I'm actually looking to, you know, just to get a dopamine hit. Most of the times I'm just looking to relax, you know, I'm just looking to relax. And so I'm like, okay, I go into that state of mind, I'm looking to relax, and I can observe my brain, you know, being hit with all this mind fog of, this is the way that we've always done it. How do we find a new way to do it? You know, walking myself through that, by saying, okay, this is what we're experiencing. This is what we're doing. How can we do this? All right, let's say, you know, we reduce the cues, and then I observe myself, and then I say, okay, I want to maybe get something to eat, right? Because when I eat, I'm feeling relaxed, because I don't know, eating relaxes me. I don't struggle really with an eating disorder or anything. If anything, I think I should probably eat more. So for me, it's like, oh, this is a really good this is a really good behavior to engage in. And then I can also say, all right, I'm still feeling the urge though. Like, I'm still feeling like I need to release. Now, I found that dancing has been one of the major ways in which I've been able to move energy, because I don't know, I really enjoy dancing. And when I channel my energy into dancing, I find it very, very hard for me to even think about porn in those times, because I'm so in the flow of what I'm doing, and I'm so enjoying the moment, and I'm having so much fun, you know what I mean, that I don't think about how I could even do something different, right? Like, outside of this, because it's just so much fun. But yeah, I don't know. I think that those are some of the ways that I personally have dealt with those urges.
How's it going for you?
It's going really well, actually. Like, the more that I do it, the more that I engage myself and the more that I channel that energy into things that I really, 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 really enjoy, that actually give me that dopamine that I'm actually looking for, the more that it has less of a grip on me, and that old friend, right? It's like, oh, I don't want to play with you anymore. You don't really value me or see me or love me the way that I need you to, right? Because porn doesn't help you. It's a lie, right? And once I've been able to teach my mind that, you know, hey, this is a lie. This is an illusion. This is not real. Fantasizing about something does not mean that you're actually doing that. So it's better for me to engage in actual things that can engage my brain centers, and I feel like I'm engaged. That's the word, engaged.
Yeah, and do you feel like you're sort of in control of these urges at the moment?
So I feel like I have control of these urges at the moment. I would say that, yeah. You know, I found myself, if I can look back, you know, as me being a little vulnerable, and I can like look back at the last time that I relapsed, I think it's when I don't have a care for myself, when I don't care about myself. When I say like, oh, I don't care about what happens to me, I'm whatever. That state of mind, that junkie, that my friend will call it the saboteur, you know, I will call it like the ego. When that state of mind comes, it's like, I don't care. It's almost like a way of punishing myself. But when I have deep like love for myself, and I can observe that, and I think, no, you know, I think this is not an act of service towards Ariel, right? If I look at it from like a third person perspective, this is not an act of service. This is not a loving act towards Ariel, and I don't want to let this treat Ariel in a way which is unloving. And now, obviously, that did not happen overnight. That's taken me about 3 years to be able to get to that point, to be able to look at this, and say, like, this is not actually helping me, you know, and this is what would help me. That took some time. Yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like you've made so much progress in your life, and I can really feel that you're like passionate about what you do, and like you're excited for the future and to help people, and that you care. And it's really, really nice to talk with you because of that. I think one thing we were talking about last night, so we had like a group coaching call with Mary and a few of the guys in the program, and I was basically having a bit of a joke with Mary, because a few of the ratings on the podcast had dropped a little bit, like down to like 4.4. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, I don't think people like this really sort of brutal, like hard approach that we have now, because it's not mm-hmm. brutal and it's not that hard, but we're a bit more to the point than I was in the past. They used to be a little bit more like soft with the podcast, like, you know, kind of talking about like maybe self-compassion and, you know, take it mm-hmm. easy, relapses aren't too bad and all of this sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
My perspective now has changed quite a bit. I'm now like, right, relapses are relapses. They're not part of recovery. They're really pretty bad. Like, they're going to lead to addiction. Mm-hmm. And what you said there was so, so true about you relapsing when you don't really respect or have too much love for yourself in that moment. I really, really resonate with that, because I think this is why I'm now taking quite a hard, direct approach to this issue. Okay. Because I'm like, the best way to possibly love yourself is to not do the things which destroy your mental health. And so really, this is kind of like a kind thing to do, is to be like really honest and direct with yourself. Right. You said honesty, you said discipline earlier in this call as well.
Yeah.
I think those two things are so, so important, because you can have all the self-compassion in the world, but if you're being self-compassionate about addiction, then you're not really being self-compassionate, because that's like the worst thing you can do to yourself, is be caught up in this addiction, you know?
Right. My mentor would say, like, you don't have compassion for ego, you know? So this is the self-compassion in that regard can be like, it can, if it keeps you stuck in the cycle, then yeah, you need to be a little bit more stern. And sometimes that sternness and that directness is actually compassionate. Compassionate doesn't always look like it's okay, it's okay, it's okay. Sometimes it looks like you fucked up, you keep fucking up, you need to make a change here. What is it gonna take? You know, what is it gonna take? Are you gonna continue ruining your life, ruining your relationships and watching yourself and your health deteriorate? Or are you actually gonna take the chance to heal and to actually make a change in your life, make a difference, you know? And that sternness and that directness and that assertiveness is super necessary when it comes to this journey, because if you don't have that, then you're gonna keep healing the same wound over and over again. You're gonna open it again, and then you're gonna, you know, it's gonna be a cycle. So yeah, that high discipline, that high love for yourself, that high regard and high respect for yourself will naturally translate into you that doing more loving behaviors, right? Why do I get up in the morning and brush my teeth? Because I love myself, because I appreciate Ariel and I want Ariel to be healthy. Why do I search to go to the gym? It's not because I want people to find me attractive, even though that can certainly be a latent motivator. But it's because I love Ariel, and I think that if Ariel has a healthy body, then he can make a greater impact, and he can motivate other people to do the same. Now, I remember, you know, reading from your profile, you said you aim to help ambitious. And I love that word. When I read that word, it resonated. I felt that all through my body. I was like, ambitious. Right? You wanna have ambition. Ambition is a core power. Ambition will get you to stop making excuses for yourself. Ambition will say, this is my problem. I'm gonna do whatever it takes to solve it, and I'm committed. But it requires commitment. Because if you don't have that commitment, just like I didn't, I think that, you know, I can be a little bit compassionate for myself, you know, maybe when I was in college, because I wanted to find a way to get out of these compulsive behaviors, yet I was not committed to it, really. I was half committed. I was only willing to change as long as I can still, in a way, not change, right? Like, maybe superficial changes. When it came to doing the deep, deep, deep work, where maybe that required me to say goodbye to some relationships, saying goodbye to some friends, and really renouncing a lot of the lifestyle that I used to live, that became really hard. And I tried for some time to maybe leverage it and find a way that, okay, maybe I'll quit, but I'll still engage in, you know, every now and again, I'll watch porn, maybe, you know, it's not hurting anybody, right? It doesn't matter if I do it maybe once a week, or, you know, if I hook up.
It's junky thinking.
And then the sage mind takes over, because eventually it has to, and says, you need to create a foundation for yourself, because if you stay in this particular state of thinking, the impact that you're going to have on your life, on your family, on your future is not going to be what you want it to be, right? So yeah, I, you know, highly resonate with that, with that part that you just said about being stern, and you know, that sternness is compassionate. That sternness is compassionate. That discipline is compassionate. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And in the past, I used to kind of take this approach of trying to become more compassionate towards myself and kind of deal with the thoughts of, oh, I'm a failure, or I've got this big problem with porn. And I focused too much, I would say, on trying to deal with the thoughts after relapse that would come up, and dealing with the shame and stuff, which has definitely been very beneficial, but it's like, if you want to get rid of shame, just stop engaging in an addictive habit. Like, that's the easiest way to actually
deal with
shame and feelings of failure, is you actually just tackle the root of it. And for me, I didn't really feel too much shame or feelings of failure outside of the addiction. For me, it really was the addiction that was causing me so much suffering, because not having control over yourself is a really, really hard thing to have going on in your life, you know? And I think now I'm just like, right, let's help committed, ambitious people actually quit this properly. And then they can also, outside of the sort of program, like outside of quitting porn, focus on being more compassionate. And that's an amazing thing, and all the other things, and self-development. But I think the addiction is what causes people a lot of pain. And I think a lot of people think it's the pain that causes the addiction, and that's probably how it starts. But then at a certain point, it goes like, pain causes addiction, then it's the addiction that's causing the pain, and then it's a cycle, you know.
You know, what comes to mind is like, it's like kind of like binge drinking, right? It's like you get hungover the next day and you feel like shit. Well, you feel like shit because you spent all night like filling your body with poison. Of course your body's gonna react feeling like shit. So if you're engaging in behaviors that are filling your mind with shit, which is what, you know, this is, then of course you're going to spend, you know, like the next day, the next week, or whatever, however long it takes, feeling like shit, because you're doing shitty things. You eat shit, you're gonna get shit in return. And I think that, you know, when it comes to like gay culture, I know that I used to encounter a lot of people around me that would complain that, you know, they were not engaging, they were not moving forward in their relationships, that their relationships were very superficial, that their relationships were just based off of sex. And I was like, well, what are you, you know, what are you engaging in, right? Because if that's what you're putting forth, that's what you're going to get in return. If you keep putting forth and engaging in relationships where you prioritize sex right off the get-go, or you're basing your connection primarily on a sexual attraction, then you're going to get a relationship based on a hypersexual base and not a base created on safety, vulnerability, on, you know, mutual trust, mutual cooperation, mutual purpose building. And I think that maybe when you're, I don't know how old you are, maybe I have my birthday coming up, so, and I'm turning 27, so maybe my mind is already like, I'm almost 30, and so, you know, I'm like processing that, and I'm like, you know, when I was in my early 20s, that was fun to me. It just felt like a little bit of like the cool kids, and, you know, I like the hunting game. As I'm approaching my 30s now, I'm like, this is ridiculous. This is getting old. This is getting tiring. And I feel like I'm not friends with any of those people anymore. And, you know, as I, you know, choose to create a legacy, build a legacy, it becomes so much more important for me to establish a base of friendship and love and support. And one of the things that I'm also getting away from is looking at myself as like, looking as every guy that I see, or that I, you know, every gay guy that I connect with as like a potential partner, and just looking at, like, desexualizing my mind into, this is a friend, right? And I'm sure it happens to you, maybe, like, or I don't know, right? If you look at women from a sexual type of perspective, it can be very degrading, and they can feel it too, and they might not, you know, they might get away from you, or they might see you as like, what kind of person is this? They don't honor me. Versus when you truly honor like the woman or the man that you come in front of you, not as a, you know, a sexual object, but as a true human being. You know, I used to do this prayer. I was like, you know, this is God's child, and I want to have the utmost respect and love for God's children. That's what I would say to myself. You know, if you're not religious or anybody doesn't associate with that, that's okay. Just having that deep love and appreciation for the people around you. I couldn't do that when I was in my lusty mind. I could not do that. I can tell you for a fact that it was really difficult for me to connect, respect, and properly love myself and the person like in front of me when I was coming at it like from a strictly sexual type of mentality. It was really challenging. I almost felt like, you know, the junkie mind would take over, and the junkie does not respect boundaries, doesn't really care about, the junkie mind is just trying to get off, right? Trying to get that high. That's its
That's his focus. It's laser focus.
It's focus. It's mission, right? It's to get that dopamine hit. And so, you know, once you are able to break away from that, you start noticing that there's so much better ways to relate and to be able to integrate yourself into society. Now, Thomas, what has been, you know, in your experience, like, what has been like the most helpful thing to you in quitting porn?
I resonate with a lot of what you were saying there. First of all, just with like dating apps as well. I was saying to you before we jumped on, it was cool. You know, it's something that I still want to work on. I only downloaded them again last week, but you know, they're so set up you to objectify people because of the way people dress and the sort of prompts on there. And it's such a superficial medium to engage with people. And often it's the medium that's the problem, not the person themselves. But if you're like engaging with a screen and seeing like 2D pixels of women, it's like, it's not healthy for your brain. But anyway, to answer your question, what's been the most helpful thing for me? That's a really, really good question. Wow, where do we go? Okay, well, I've got like three things to say. So yeah, the first thing that we teach is deprivation thinking, which is all about understanding very, very deeply that there's two options here. You can engage in this content, or you can choose not to engage in this content. And this is where I went wrong for so many years, is I was so focused on like quit. Like, I can't look at porn, blah, 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 that all this resistance would build up within me. And so I'd experience urges, and then I'm in like a battle with myself because I hadn't really deeply acknowledged that actually I want to look at porn and I don't want to look at porn. And that's cool because I'm a human being and it's totally natural to want to look at something that's giving me this huge evolutionary reward. So that's number one, is getting out of this deprivation cycle, which will just get you spinning around, like sort of fighting yourself and internal conflicts, when the reality is it's always a choice. You can do that if you want to. Step number two, I would say, would be having this very, very specific script, which I read out every time I have an urge. And so I just go through it, and that involves some of the deprivation thinking. And then I have my benefits list and my cost list, and all of this is in the program basically. But yeah, it's about really understanding, okay, what's the actual reality of this? Like, what happens if I do engage? What happens if I don't engage? And really visualizing that, because when you're in addiction, you don't really understand the cost of doing it. And so when you're about to do it, you're not thinking straight. And so we need to have something there ready for us to think straight again. Because as I say, like, urges only come up maybe like 0.1% of the time. It's only in that moment that it really matters. Everything else is kind of irrelevant in many ways when it comes to addiction. And then the third thing for me would be to, yeah, just continuously filter out any junky thinking. And I think your point about having like a group or a tribe is really important here, because I think talking about the junky thinking really helps. You know, I talk with Mary personally, I share any junky thoughts that come up, and she can kind of make me go, oh yeah, that doesn't, you know, that's the junky mind, you know, that's all that's going on.
Yeah.
And I think that's really helpful. And I think in some of these communities though, people have junky thoughts and they kind of rationalize and excuse their relapses away. Mm-hmm. And then other people are like, oh yeah, no, it's fine, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is, that's just more junky thinking by other people. So if you're in a community with a load of addicted people who haven't been taught by an expert how to quit something, it's like, well, you're all just going to have junky thinking, and you're going to share that junky thinking, and you're going to keep on getting addicted. So yeah, they're the three things I would say. Does that all make sense? Any questions on any of that?
No, I think that's absolutely right. Like what you said, like if you, I've never actually taken part in like NoFap groups or anything like that. Just because I never felt like that resonated with me. Every group that I've always been in, first of all, has never really been geared towards like porn addiction. It's always been like towards just, you know, how to rectify your mind to get back on track in general. And I think that maybe I just intuitively maybe knew that I didn't want to be, you know, like super like surrounded by other junkie, like in that regard. You know, because I didn't want my thoughts to be reaffirmed. I'm like, no, I want to be disciplined. You know, I think that once I started really loving myself, and I mean truly, like truly loving myself, you know, which I did not do when I was, I did not love myself when I was deep in my addiction, right? I think that was the most low moment of my life where I just truly did not love myself. Once I started loving myself and identifying that Ariel is worthy of living a valuable, rich life, that naturally led me to hold myself to a higher regard, right? And so, you know, one of my friends, he calls that the saboteur mind. The saboteur mind is what tries to sabotage you from getting your good, right? From getting that prize, from getting the actual reward, because it opts out for like the junkie mind. The more that I was able to love myself, the more that I was able to respect myself, the more that I was able to hold myself to a higher regard, the more that I was able to cherish, nurture, and love myself, the easier that it is to break free, and the easier it is for these urges to, I look at them in the same way that maybe I will look at junk food, right? Like, it can taste good in the short term, but in the long term, this is not a loving thing to do for yourself and your body. And this is the one body that you have. Now, I think, you know, you and I know for both, for men, for male bodies, when you're ejaculating frequently, it can have depletive effects on the body. So, you know, you're depleting yourself of vitamins, you're depleting yourself of nourishment from yourself, and it can hurt your health. It can drain your energy. And so you don't have the energy that you would need to be able to go forth and create an impact on your life and to be able to invest that time and that energy in your relationship. So yeah, it's important for us to have a higher regard. Thank you for saying that, to have a higher standard for ourselves and not be too compassionate with the junkie mind, right? The junkie mind deserves to be disciplined. And the junkie mind, you know, I think for me, one of the biggest things that the junkie mind would tell me is that I don't matter, right? Like, if I don't matter, then it doesn't really matter what I do to myself. Who cares? I'm just another person. And being able to love myself in that space, because that's really what it is, and just, you know, that's not the truth. That's not the truth of who Ariel is, because, you know, I come from a very spiritual background. So I was like, you know, God loves me, love loves me, the universe loves me. And if I can love myself and I'm one with this force, then how can I not matter? That doesn't even make any sense. There's like, logically it doesn't add up. And yeah, the more that I got, the more that I started noticing too, that my reality started shifting, and I was able to connect with people, meet people, and circumstances and situations started presenting themselves to me that make me not want to engage in that behavior. Like, why would I, you know, why would I spend time in the junkie life if my life outside of that is so rich and so wonderful and so amazing?
You know what I think happens as well? Like, I don't know about you, but I think that inner criticism in one way or another is brutal, and it's so similar to the junkie thinking. Often it will be junkie thinking, and it's like, you can kind of start off with a few behaviors that are bad. Like for me, if I'd eaten quite unhealthily in the past, or I spent too much time laying down on my phone, wasting time, if I'd spent some time on social media, maybe I'd start to have all this inner criticism, and it'd like be pretty intense, you know, like what's going on in my mind is just not healthy, and it's just me like beating myself up, and I'm not even like aware of those thoughts, but it's kind of like in the subconscious somewhere, I'm basically telling myself, oh, you idiot, like what are you doing, like you're so stupid, like why are you wasting all this time? And it's just like inner criticism after inner criticism, and it's just like trying to make me feel so much pain. And so then I'm going and getting more dopamine hits to try to escape the inner criticism, because the discomfort is so painful. I don't want to feel that, you know. So
yeah,
I'm going to get the dopamine hits, and then it's like, oh, you idiot, you're getting more dopamine hits, you're spending more time on social media, you're eating even more healthily. And you get to a point, and it's just like how it used to feel for me. It's like, right, well, yeah, what's the point? I don't love myself, I don't respect myself. And it's in that kind of weird like small energy that I would then go and relapse and then just kind of want to start again and be like, all right, now it's day one, right, I'm motivated again, I'm going to stand up, I'm going to be stronger, I'm going to be more disciplined. And then it was just this cycle going round and round and round. But now I'm out on that, I realize that actually all of those thoughts and feelings of like, oh, you're an idiot, or you're stupid, or you've done this wrong, but the inner criticism, all of that is junkie thinking that would put me into a mental helplessness state to try and get me to engage in this compulsive behavior. And this is what happens for a lot of people, I believe, is that the addictive part of their mind will make them feel shit to try and make them disrespect themselves so much that they're then willing to do something which they know deep down hurts them so much physically, spiritually, emotionally, relationships, connection, everything, right? And I think this is what happens. But this is just my experience. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that self-love can be a much more powerful motivating force than self-criticism. And, you know, self-criticism can work because that part of your mind is trying to protect you, is trying to be like, hey, like, what the fuck are you doing, bro? Like, get out of your ass, right? Like, it there comes a point where it's creating more harm than good. And so, you know, I like to think of it as like a loving father type of figure, like stern. But if it's too stern or too critique-ish, then it can make you feel like you don't matter and you're devalued and, you know, you're like trash. But if it's too soft, then it doesn't quite create a motivator for you to create a change in your life. And so you want to meet that happy medium where it's like, okay, I can be compassionate with myself because I love myself and I deserve compassion and I'm worthy of it. But also, I need to get my shit together. I need to wake up earlier. You know, I'm getting older. That's what I like to take myself. One of my things that I like to tell myself is like, I'm getting older. Now, to some people, that may be like a bad thing because, you know, they're like priming your mind for like aging. But to me, the way that I think of it is like, I'm maturing, right? And I choose to mature. And as I'm maturing, like, I don't want to allow like little boy behavior in my life. I'm not an adolescent anymore. Like, what is this? I don't want to partake in this anymore. So I'm going to make decisions and I'm going to act out from a more mature mind. And I make that choice and I'm like, okay, what would a mature person do? I would wake up earlier. I would prepare my things. You know, I used to have a bad habit of like, you know, when I was in college of just spending hours. I was spending hours on Grindr. Just wasting my day, you know? I was like, what? If I look back at it, I'm like, all that time I could have been spent like, you know, working on my side projects, going to the gym, doing sports, learning entrepreneurship. I mean, if I could tell you like the amount of time that I just wasted in my college years, it's like, wow, like, you know? So I think now it's why I feel so passionate about this topic and it's why I'm listening for... Yes, I'm making up for lost time for sure. Subconsciously, I think that's a big motivator. And you know, I like to think that we don't really waste time. However, I know that I'm not the only one that has this pressure. You're not the only one, and I know how common this is. And you know, I was actually reading the statistics on I think it was like Your Brain on Porn, and they had statistics of for how what age people are being exposed to it. How often they watch it, and it's a lot, right? And I was like, oh my god, like if I'm talking about it, you know, and I'm already connected with so many people who are having these issues, and imagine, you know, people who are in their younger years, who are 13, 14, 15, you know, or they're in college or they're feeling isolated for whatever reason, like this can have a larger societal impact. And so I do feel a little bit of like a protective bone in me to, you know, help people get out of that and
you will experience
it's a big water reader for me.
You will, yeah, you speak so well. I mean, I'm pretty tired today, but honestly,
yeah,
you speak so much better than me, and your niche is so niche. There's no one else helping people who are gay trying to quit porn, and you're going to help thousands of people. You know, I'm excited for you because I think you're going to change a lot of lives, seriously. And this is really, really important because, as you say, people are getting addicted at stupidly young ages. I got addicted at like 12 years old. I didn't know anything when I was 12. I was like some stupid, funny kid in class getting like kicked out of class for making terrible jokes. And like, you know, I didn't know anything back then. It's too young to get addicted to pornography. You know, it's crazy, man. Like, this is an epidemic, as we were saying earlier. And so I feel like, in a way, if you can learn how and you can be brave enough to talk about this stuff, then it's an amazing, amazing thing to go and then help other people quit as well. So I absolutely love what you're doing. And I think it's going to help a lot of people. I really, really do.
Thank you. I appreciate you saying that. Coming from the, you know, from the master.
Not quite. Thank you. Mary is the expert. I just look up to Mary and copy what she says, but I heard him right. So we'll wrap it up there. Where can people find you as well if they're wanting any help with this or just want to have a chat?
They can follow me on Instagram. I need to change my Instagram name actually to make myself easier to find. So I will hand you the handle, and I'm sure you can add it to the description cool. For this podcast, and they can find me. I would really appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I've really liked talking to you. I feel like your energy is just so radiant and nice. So hopefully we'll get to chat again sometime.
Likewise.
All right, take it easy. And thanks to anyone listening. I hope you have enjoyed the podcast, and I hope you have an amazing rest of your day.